Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies? It's the what the fuck apocalypse. Welcome. Welcome to it. How's everyone doing? How are you? Welcome to the new people. I have to say that right out of the gate here. I was talking to Brendan McDonald, the genius who runs the knobs here at WTF, the genius who does the tidying up of the mess that I am. And the conversations I have, the genius at the entire sort of functional side of this racket, Brendan McDonald, has informed me that our numbers look good. The numbers look good. And I don't Google myself. I don't search me. I don't check algorithms or numbers related to me. And occasionally Brendan will say the numbers look good, and not only good, but great. And I think that's has something to do with the fact that we're with this with Acast now, this new platform that has a international footprint. And I'm getting emails from Belfast and the UK and from Australia. It feels like there's an influx of the international crowd, and these people are coming in to 800 episodes that they can just listen. They're right there. They don't have to join up for anything. They're just if you're new to it. And, have fun. There's your 800 episodes right there. No paywall for those 800. You're welcome. And welcome. Seriously, though, thanks for coming on board. I appreciate it. Anyway, before I get going here, before I start rambling too much, we've been doing bonus content that we call Ask Mark Anything on WTF Plus, and I'll be doing one again next week. This time, if you want to send me a question, all you have to do is click on the link in the show description. On whatever app you're using right now, just go to the episode notes and you'll see a link for Ask Mark Anything. Send me a question and I may answer it on next week's bonus content. Dig it. And if you're not subscribed to The Full Marin on WTF Plus, there's a link for that in the show notes as well. Or you can go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. Today on the show, I talked to Gerard Carmichael. Now, look, I talked to this guy back in 2015. If people want to go listen to that chat, you can. It's episode 631, and it's available for free in all podcast apps. No ads if you listen on WTF Plus. But back then, he had just come off a few movies. He had his own show on NBC, The Carmichael Show. He had some juice as a stand-up. But since then, as many of you probably know, he's been developing a lot of projects, including the first film he directed. It's called On the Count of Three, and it's now streaming on Hulu. He also hosted SNL and released a new stand-up special directed by Bo Burnham called Rathaniel. And he's got Emmy nominations for both of those things. He also came out as gay. And that was sort of the big, no spoilers, but that's sort of the big thing about Rathaniel and the big thing about Gerard at this point in time. Here's an update on Charlie Beans Roscoe. Are we going to put him on mic or no? He's sleeping. Do we wake him up? Charlie Beans Roscoe is, what is he, 5 weeks now? This is a cat that there's part of me that doesn't want me to take. Hi, Charlie Beans. Hey, Charlie Beans Roscoe. Hi. Do you want to talk? Charlie Beans. No? He's not going to talk. He's just going to sit here and look cute. I thought you were going to talk. Charlie Beans. No, he just looks like he woke up from a nap. Come on, Charlie Beans. Talk to the people. I don't think he's going to do it. Anyway, this cat is looking great. Take him away, kid. Take Charlie Beans away. He didn't do it. He blew it. He choked. We got to get him stage ready. His mother is coming around still, but not as frequently. I don't know where the other five kittens are. Sadly, it's not my job, and I'll keep you abreast of that situation. But I believe this cat's going to be mine, though I'm nervous. Not unlike a parent that, is it time for another kitten in the house? Is it time? Am I going to have to move soon? Because I don't know if you know this, but they're going to start rationing water here soon in California. Apparently, we've got to cut back something like 15% to 25% water usage. And then in September, there's a good chunk of Los Angeles. We just cannot use. Now he's talking. Now we just can't use water for like 2 weeks. Because they got to repair something. That's what they're saying. I hope that's the truth. I don't know. I really don't know. All I know is that, is he going to talk? Come here, Charlie Beans. Hey, Charlie Beans. Charlie Beans. Uh-huh. There you go. Is it you just talk when you're uncomfortable? Is that it? When I hold you, when you're not in your blankie? Come on, Charlie Beans. What do you got? What do you got? You got one squeak? What do I got to do, squeeze you? Come on. What, I got to squeeze you? Charlie Beans. No, I guess not. So what was I talking about? Oh, like I read an article about the possibility of a mega flood in Los Angeles, like a possibility of a mega flood in Southern California. And you would think in normal times that would be a terrifying prospect. But in the times we're in right now, I was like, bring it. Let's ride it out. Bring the mega flood. Hey, ow, 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 ow. Hey, Beans. What's up, Charlie? What's up? What? Now you're going to talk? Okay, good enough. You did it. Congratulations. Ladies and gentlemen, Charlie Beans Roscoe, the miracle cat. But I saw this article, and I was like, I'm ready for the flood. Now, that's apocalyptic, that sentence. Classically apocalyptic, but for me it's more about, can we just get things kind of moisturized here, even if it's radical moisturization? There is no regular weather anymore either. Yet water just dumps out of the sky like it's being just poured on us out of God's bucket, or we're just slowly baking. And some of my jokes are coming true. Not great. They were not supposed to be true. First of all, fascism was supposed to be a threat, not the future. And also, it's going to, I have a joke that as a reference, the temperature is 130 degrees Fahrenheit, which seems like it's going to happen pretty soon. I'm in Lincoln, Nebraska tonight at wherever the hell it is. Go find it. The Rococo Theater tonight. I think I've gotten everybody that could possibly want to see me in Lincoln, Nebraska, hip to me being there. I don't know if my drunky hipster friend who's gone on to become a slightly anti-Semitic farmer outside of Lincoln will be there. I don't even know if he's still alive. Does anybody have eyes on Ross? Who's got eyes on Ross Broccoli? Anybody? Anyone got eyes on Ross Broccoli? So look, folks, here's this. The pre-sale for my new tour dates is still going on until 10 p.m. tonight. Then all general admission tickets will be on sale tomorrow. Here's where I'll be. You ready? Oklahoma City at the Tower Theater Wednesday, November 2nd. Dallas, Texas at the Majestic Theater Thursday, November 3rd. San Antonio at the Tobin Center for the Performing Arts Friday, November 4th. And Houston at the Cullen Theater at the Wortham Center Saturday, November 5th. Then Eugene, Oregon at the Holt Center for the Performing Arts Friday, November 18th. And Bend, Oregon at Tower Theater Saturday, November 19th. And in December, I'm in Asheville, North Carolina at the Orange Peel Friday, December 2nd. and Nashville, Tennessee at the James K. Polk Theater, Saturday, December 3rd. The pre-sale password until 10 p.m. tonight is TIME. All caps, T-I-M-E. All general admission tickets on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m. Go to WTFpod.com/tour for links and information. Holy shit. Charlie Beans Roscoe. So, look, Gerard's movie, Gerard Carmichael, who you're going to hear from shortly here, his movie is called On the Count of Three, which he directed and stars in, is now streaming on Hulu. He's nominated for 2 Emmy Awards, Outstanding Guest Actor in a Comedy Series for hosting SNL, and Outstanding Writing for a Variety Special for Rathaniel. This is me talking once again to Gerard Carmichael.
Have you ever been to like Nice Guy or any of the like the hip whatever club?
No hip anything for me.
If you've ever done that, so like they're made for people to see who's there.
Oh right, okay,
and yeah, not for the individual dining experience or whatever.
You been to that place, Crossroads, the vegan place?
Yeah, I've been there. Yeah,
that feels like that kind of.
Yeah, it's a little bright and sceney. Yeah. It's so, the lighting's for selfies.
But do you find that when you go to those places, it's mostly spectators?
It's a lot of spectators. This though. The food was worth it. It was almost worth, like, it was some obnoxious guy came and tried to sit in the booth. Just weird, wild, obnoxious LA crowd. But, like,
there's more of that now.
Yeah.
There's a lack of personal boundary thing happening.
Yeah. Well, people are so excited to be around people, I guess.
I don't think that's it.
Thrilled. I think like that, they're out the house and, like, thrilled.
I don't think so. I think it has something to do with accessibility, and social media platforms have broken everyone's brain and they just assume this intimacy with everybody. I don't know that everybody's excited. I just think that there's no differentiation. If they follow you on whatever, everyone just feels like, oh, I know that guy. I'm going to hang out with that guy.
I do. But speaking as a fan, like if you talk to them a lot. Uh-huh. Then they, what else are they supposed to feel?
Like, no, I get it.
Like,
but
if you're like constantly engaged, it would kind of feel like if I were a fan.
Yeah.
Like I'm very thankful for whatever fans I have.
Sure.
Because I think we have a great relationship. Like a tilt of the hat.
Sure.
Like in New York City. Point.
You get it.
I drink my coffee.
Right.
Have a nice day.
But are they respectful mostly?
Very. Sure. And even like picture, it's like sweet brief exchanges that I'm like thankful for, and I think it's because like I'd imagine like they don't feel, recently people felt closer to me, but like they don't feel as familiar as like they would someone who
has
like,
a podcast twice a week.
People have heard you
go
hours and just hours of like all of your feelings documented, so I see you on the street. I've listened to all of your show, it's like, oh my God, Mark, are you all right?
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if he got his toilet fixed.
Yeah, all of it though.
I get it. And I have to sort of act graciously around that. But I imagine that at this point, the fans you have are respectful, some inspired, some grateful.
Yeah.
So like, you know, it's really relative to what you put out in the world. And you've always been pretty honest and now more honest. So I think people appreciate that. And you know, you're not attracting guys who are like, there he is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's not that.
Well, the person last night wasn't even there for me. They were there for my friend and like sat in the booth next to her. And it was just wild. The assumption of like, because I do feel you, like that crossing the line.
Was she
like,
a comic?
And actress and just like.
Big, but everyone knows her.
People know, like, right. I mean, and
Tiffany?
No. Well, she would just be like singing karaoke with people at the, like, going to dinner with Tiff, like. You're signing up for the show.
You're signing up for the commitment.
If it happened with Tiff, I would just be like, we're not dancing yet. Anyway, the restaurant was great.
What's it called?
Mother Wolf.
All right.
Atmosphere of 6 out of 10, 5 probably.
Sure. So I got to wear shades? Is that what you're telling
you
me?
You should wear shades. You're going to get attacked. People love you.
No. I never have that problem. It's always sort of like, why is that sad lady keep looking at me?
No, but you, like, because you've gotten more famous. You
a
get
little.
Increasingly a little. More
I
mean, famous.
I think I've found my level. I think I don't know if I'm getting increasingly more famous, but there is a variety of things people could know me from. That's what I never know.
Yeah.
Are you a podcast person? Are you a Glow person?
But
are you a stand-up person?
But you haven't found your level. You're still doing stuff. If you found your level, you'd be constantly busy. Bill Withers and like,
oh yeah,
just
yeah,
like,
doing that song again.
Well, just in
Ain't
Georgia.
No sunshine.
Well, no, I'm saying just in, he just like left.
Yeah.
He was like, and then I'm out, and it just and like then, left and went
I,
to.
I think about that all the time, though.
Yeah, we have that option.
We do. Yeah. Not you. You're just starting.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing that. But I'm saying
you're not any social media problems. You don't do TikTok or anything.
No, I have a private IG for my friends that I like
it?
Post. Yeah, but that's it.
Boys, I was going to ask you about TikTok, but you can't help me.
I mean, I see it. I see my friends
see it too,
send me,
but
and I
got,
and I look at all of
I just
them
got verified on it, and I'm old. And
oh,
I don't,
that's cool.
No,
what do you post?
No,
what do you put on
I
there?
I put anything on there.
What do you
I,
want
I
to put
even,
on there?
I don't know. I haven't even started yet. Like, I don't even know. Like, I just need someone to walk me through getting set up so I don't just like I don't okay. mind looking like an old idiot, but I
well,
don't
that could be the thing
I,
you know
I'm kind of thinking
thing.
That
yeah.
but I want to do it on purpose.
I well don't, you can't you gotta trust fall into what you don't know.
That's
and
probably
just,
true
and just try and it'll be much funnier if you're actually trying.
Yeah, maybe that's true. I don't know how to do this
and you're just failing yeah, at
I,
it
I
that
think
would
it, that'd
funnier.
Be the way to go.
Yeah,
so I watched this new movie last night.
Yeah,
now what's the story behind that? Because I thought you, I didn't know, I thought initially that you wrote it, but you didn't. And it's been around for a while, right? This
made it a couple years ago.
The count
ago.
Of three?
Yeah,
on the
on
count,
the count
of, three.
Of three? Yeah, on the count of three.
You do it during COVID?
Did it reshoots during COVID, and oh. I started shooting it before, like right before COVID.
But so how did it come about?
It's a couple years ago. It was a script that Ari Kacher, who I work with a lot, and Ryan Welch had written.
These are producers?
These,
no,
are
these
are writers.
These are
writers.
And how'd you know him?
Ari I met years ago. He was actually doing stand-up for a little bit. Like,
yeah.
Open mic. Like, and he quit. Like, he jumped out of the game. He's yeah. a writer. But we met, and I appreciated him because I remember seeing him at the Sunset Grill, and he would sign up and then go wait in his car.
Yeah.
And then he would go up and then he would leave.
Yeah.
Like immediately.
Sure.
He didn't talk to anybody. And I was like, oh, I want to be friends with him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even though friendship doesn't seem to be his thing. Like, I.
He doesn't have that weird neediness.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was about
cool.
the thing he was
sure.
working on.
Right.
I really appreciated
yeah.
that. And so we've worked on a lot of things together. He worked on Carmichael's show and is a producer and writer on most of the things I've done.
Uh-huh.
But I really love this script. I love this idea just because it felt weirdly aspirational. Like it was rooted in the thought of having a last day. Like, you know, it's easy to get hung up on the suicide aspect of it. Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's a suicide, whatever. But it's really just about like two people who have made a decision to end it.
Right, but it's not. But there's nothing. It's not founded in joy. You know,
But that's what was interesting to me was this idea of having a last day,
sure.
and what would that actually play out like? You ever seen the movie The Bucket List? The like
yeah.
Morgan Freeman,
oh, with the
like
old guys?
Jack Nicholson,
sure.
Right?
And, I don't know why I saw it,
but
I did
but
see it.
It's usually this aspirational. Like this has been done before. This isn't the first like
sure.
you know last day movie. You know, you're skydiving and
yeah.
it's these aspirational things and reconciling. And I started playing out what actual reconciliation would mean, like with a
yourself?
Father or with your loved ones, with those around you and yourself. I mean,
well,
is you trying to reconcile with yourself by making this decision.
Oh, I get it. So the decision to end it, what precludes that is that I'm gonna settle all my business.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And that's the excuse to settle all your business.
The
and
film
you have nothing
is about
to lose.
That day. Yes.
Because theoretically, you could have settled your business through the character with your father at another time.
But again, you make this decision.
Sure, I get it. But the decision made on behalf of the other guy, I mean, I'm just listening to you. I'm not arguing with you. But I think that for me, what it was about was, you know, resolvable problems and seemingly unresolvable problems.
Mm-hmm.
So because the other character, once it unfolds, you know, what his issue is and what may be at the heart of his particular emotional and mental problems, you know, it borders on unresolvable.
Yes, yes.
And you know, how he looks at his whole life in relation to that, you know, is overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
So, and your character, you're sort of like, well, this guy, you know, is having a hard time owning up to responsibilities.
Yes.
And he has some unresolvable problems, but they are resolvable.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, you know.
But listen, it's not about, that's 30,000 feet above it, resolvable, unresolvable,
but no, yeah,
right?
Yeah,
it's,
okay.
It's about the actual feeling of being in it, and everything feels unresolvable if it were resolved. Our problems that the immediate ones, like hunger,
right?
This is result. We can see the resolution in that, not being able to see it, and more importantly, not having the motivation to resolve them.
Sure, yeah,
like,
right.
Wallowing
right.
in that,
right? But like they had, but if it was glib, they wouldn't be empathetic characters because you wouldn't have anything invested.
Yeah,
because both of you remain, you know, empathetic. You know, you're connected to you, and in however it ends, there's a certain amount of you know, violent justice, but you never end up, you know, really disliking either of those guys or think any of their actions were unjustified, you know, carelessly.
That was a good spoiler saver too. I like how you did, like, violent justice is how I would like that written in the synopsis on Hulu.
I've been doing this a while.
Yeah, that was a great, wow. That was like Casey Kasem level disc jockey.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd like people to see the movie. I think you did a good job directing it. And I think I'd like to track back to, because the last time I talked to you, I don't even remember what it was. But
yes,
when it was,
yes,
that must have been
here.
For the Carmichael show.
Yeah.
It was at the other house.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I was kind of rolling on this sort of celebration of all things Gerard at that time, you know, from all the comedy community.
Oh, that's funny.
After a year of like, this guy came out of nowhere.
Oh, that's so funny. That's so funny.
But, you know,
you're real. Like, what do you mean? It was just too much. I'd imagine that would feel...
guys that I'd heard about, and my finger's not really on the pulse out in the world that much, but you know, like,
well,
you know,
comedy is a small, it's a small community,
bigger than it used to be.
I mean, yeah, yes and no, but like, yeah, it is in that, like, you kind of have this access, like the way the internet is this massive, ununderstandable thing, but the community as we know it, and as we know, especially at that time.
Well, we know the guys that are at a certain level, and then there's another 10,000 people.
I remember talking. I had a like 3-hour talk with Patrice on the.
Patrice O'Neil. Talked to you for 3 hours?
Yeah, exactly. A 3-hour lecture. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that.
The philosophy of Patrice.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You got the one-on-one philosophy.
It was my first time meeting him, and it was right before he died. And like, he walks up to me, and he's just like, oh, I heard about you, and you could hear the the skepticism and almost like disdain in his voice.
Sure.
Like, oh, you supposed to be the new young Chappelle nigga?
Yeah.
And I'm just like a kid. I'm like, nah. I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess
sure,
that sounds like something someone would have said.
Well, I think I talked to Neil, and like, it was just sort of like, to me at that time, you just emerged from living in a car or something. The way that Neil was talking about it at the time, it's like he just showed up and people have been letting him sleep at their house.
That's not untrue. Yeah. That is very,
And, like, you had a lot of support from dudes that were established and smart.
It's
dudes.
A good sign that you may be funny is like the funny comics never leave.
Right.
Like, we're like Mike and it and whatever. Like,
sure.
The ones that were really funny never had to go back home because someone, like, everyone accommodated. Everyone figured it out.
And also,
with no money.
They felt that you have to have no choice in your mind.
Yeah, well, but I'm saying, like, Angelo Bowers, my friend, was so funny at these open mics, like, when we first started out. There's no chance in hell we would have let Angelo go home. If he was from Modesto, if Angelo slept on couches, and he would have done so as long as sure, I didn't right. even have a home, and I would have made sure.
But I'm, yeah. what I'm saying is that because there's no other thing you want to do, it's in your
but
mind.
But I'm saying,
and heart.
But we, even me as an outsider, yeah. I wouldn't have let him.
Right, right. Oh, I see.
He was an asset. He's good.
How like, are you not going to let somebody?
We wouldn't have let him. Yeah. Like I've never heard of that. At least when I was coming up through it, sounds like such an old man. But like
he passed
someone
away.
Who was good.
He was in the car.
Yeah,
crash.
Yeah. He passed away.
Was that the car crash?
Yeah, the car crash. Yeah. 2012.
Terrible.
Yeah, terrible, terrible. Just right at the start of his potential. So like, yeah, a true.
Yeah, you were. Oh, it's okay. No, I mean you can celebrate
but I'm
your
saying,
friend.
But I'm saying, yeah. I'm saying like the world accommodated yeah. it. Like he slept sure. on couches because we didn't want to see him leave. No one right. wanted to see him leave.
Right. You also yeah. have a crew. You know, I don't know if it's all based on this sort of like.
Let me
you
tell
know.
You something. If Edge wasn't funny, like listen, bro, like yeah, take a train. Figure it out, come yeah. back. Like, crew or no crew, like who has room for that?
No, but I mean like there's a peer group that support, like you, I think everyone has a generational peer group
yeah.
where there's mutual respect and there's suggestions being made and there's also support being given just by virtue of a common kind of, you know, ambition.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, me and my friends were dogs. Like it, like that respect
we all are.
Was like based off of like competition
sure, competitive you know, and gossipy and
yeah
fucking.
Yeah but not even that but just we because we had nothing we didn't even have anything to gossip about like so like
really
I mean yeah well there's always something like this but like it really was based off like oh what I've seen you do
yeah
like,
yeah
you, seen the you, potential and like you know were, and that camaraderie sure. I think was
what's great?
Built in competition,
well, it's
yeah.
great when you have a few guys or women or people that you know that you know inspire you, and also you're like, holy fuck, that's a good joke.
Yeah.
Where'd that come from?
Yeah.
But you were like, you stayed with it. I guess my question is, you know, there was the initial arc of you, where you know you were doing you know straight up stand up, which you still do, and then you know you got that special with Spike. And you did that, and then like how? What is the arc after that? And how do you look at the opportunities you had? You know, now after Rathaniel, you know, judging against the Gerard I knew who wasn't out at the time, mm-hmm. and the material you were doing at that time, do you look back on any of that and think like you know I was stifled?
Yeah, I mean, I was stifled in my own personal life, right? Like, I'm not being truthful. I wasn't being truthful at the time. So that is stifling. That's yeah. a huge handicap.
Yeah.
To especially in an art form where you're presumed to be speaking the truth.
Some of us, sure.
Some of us, but like,
some guys
you know,
just
it's,
do jokes.
It's, yeah, true.
Yeah.
But it how I did it,
right.
you know, like,
exactly.
So it's definitely stifling.
Do you see any of your point of view coming from a place where there was a lack of self-acceptance or shame
oh, yeah.
that was driving
well, yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. My point of again, it was an extension of my life. So yeah. I was ignoring it, denying it, all those things.
Yeah.
The probably classic cycle of someone trying to dealing with shame. And the material reflected that. I was definitely. I was trying to. You know, I was trying to be interested, and so I just avoided it. I just kind of avoided talking about it as much as I could.
About the struggle.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't where I was at.
Yeah.
I wasn't like my act wasn't, so much. Dealing with an internal struggle
right.
as much as it's these kind of nice pithy ideas.
But provocative ideas. I mean
provocative
you know,
ideas. And,
yeah.
and I was excited to say them. Like
right.
it's not like any of it was false. Like the
right.
enthusiasm was there.
Sure,
like
sure.
it's how I felt. But I think a lot of it was a result of protecting what I was hiding.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of it was
right.
very, very, very defensive. I rebelled against, like, you know, speaking of comedy being a competitive sport.
Yeah.
Like, I rebelled against any like sympathy. I don't like the word support.
Yeah, me neither.
I moved to LA. No, but I moved to LA.
Serious.
Part of the reason I moved to LA to start, like I started in LA.
Yeah.
Was to get away from any, like I could have had 10 friends in North Carolina come to a show and we're going to clap for you anyway. Like, you
I can't
like,
stand when people say we're going to come to support. It's like, I know like, what I'm doing.
No, let me fail miserably.
Sure. Like, there, you know.
But don't even, like, I don't need you. Like, I had a conversation with my agent. I switched agencies and, like, it's going to hate that I'm saying this publicly, but I had an agent that was like, that flew to Montreal to come see me like
a couple weeks ago.
Like a couple weeks ago, I was doing a show there. And if I'm doing a show, like, I'm not talking to you, dude. Like, he like texted me excited for the show tonight. I'm like, what the fuck does this have to do with the price of rice?
Yeah. Wait, don't tell me you're here and don't, I don't need you.
What the fuck do you, what purpose do you have here?
Well, that's all that Montreal's for now, is for them to go drink.
Yeah. But anyway, that's an extreme situation. But I'm saying, even at the beginning, like, I so even a lot of my act, you know, as it relates to me, like, I rebelled against, I think I said things that would piss black people off because I didn't want to get like, oh, he's the poor black kid that could whatever. So my perspective was, at the time, I would have probably thought of it as like aspirational. So I had material like, I can't wait to be a Republican, and I'm going to whatever you think I am on its head, and like, I'm going to show you I'm smart. It was a lot of
Well, I think what you're doing, and I used to and I've talked about it before with myself, is that when you decide on comedy, it's you and that's it. And, you know, whatever you're coming at it with, you decide. You have to figure out what your space is on that stage. You have to, the way you do that sometimes is by pushing people away so you have it.
Yeah.
And then you find out who you are.
But, well, I'm saying, you know, as far as me, like, I was like, you know, I was trying to show that I was smart. I think I understood the craft pretty early on, you know, like it came out of nowhere. Is probably more, I remember by my second mic, I felt like I got it
right,
like, oh, okay, like I could.
So you were a prodigy,
kind of.
Yeah. That was the word on the street.
Yeah, kind of. But I rebelled against it too. One, like, it's like celebrating youth, like, hey, it's not, you know, this is like so brief, bro. Like, and it's like, it's like, who cares? Like, I felt that way. Yeah. I felt that way. Like, anytime I even thought about those things, like, because if those stats, like, someone was like, you know, you're the youngest person to get past at the cellar. Right. And I'm like, bro, if that stat means something to me.
Does it?
It's over. No, I mean, at the time, it's like a nice thing to hear in the hallway once.
Right.
Like, oh, okay, cool.
Right.
But I'm going to hold on to that. Like, I'm going to hold on to
because, you know, the one person that says that in a good way is, you know, behind them is like 100 people saying like, that fucking kid.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah. Well, comedy, like, of course they want, like comedians are all, you know, like the story of the Odyssey, they're all suitors, like, they're trying to thread the the bow.
Right. And then you come home and the dog recognizes you.
Yeah, exactly.
Dies and you kill all the suitors.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's the game.
Hey, boy, I got to kill these guys.
Yeah.
I'll be back in a little while.
Yeah.
But in doing, like, what was the process? You know, what happened ultimately with the Carmichael Show? I'd like to know more about, you know, your sort of journey to producing, and because I never understand how that happens. You know, so you did the stand-up special and then the Carmichael Show happened. And who guided you through that process of knowing that, you know, you could, you know, start to build, you know, a production company or build that place for yourself?
Nobody really. Yeah. I think it's all just an extension of my... I'm trying to find a way to say, I'm trying to find a way that sounds free of ego to say, I always just do what I want to do, but I guess there's no other way of saying that. So I'll say that I mostly just do what I want to do. Anything I produce, anything I work on is an extension of a friendship, conversations that are had on my couch or over dinner or whatever that kind of grow and become a thing.
So did it start with the Carmichael Show?
Well, Carmichael Show was originally I wasn't going to do a show for myself. I was just doing stand-up. And I always, especially at that point, it's like they're offering shows. I only did one track mine.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do that.
Right.
I hadn't even filmed anything for television at that point.
Yeah.
Deliberately. I just wanted to work and get better. You know, the opportunities present itself.
Yeah.
Yada, yada, yada. You get the show. It just kind of became an outlet for my perspective. It was fun to write with Ari. I think of the show mostly as my performance of it in my living room. Like, I think of it mostly lines back and forth. It was fun to try and get wild shit on air. Like, it was I always heard what you couldn't do and what they wouldn't allow.
Sure.
And so it was like, it was very fun to, like, I did all the things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I did all the things under the guise,
you pushed it.
Yeah, but in the wrapped up in a network sitcom with the studio audience, and that was really fun to me to, like, try and have, like, an adult show in this format. Like, and then, you know, it was over.
Two seasons?
Technically three. One was short, but yeah.
But you felt like I did it. I'm done with this format.
Yeah. Well, just I couldn't go further and still be excited about it myself.
Yeah, I get it.
Like, this is we did, I think, 32 episodes.
Yeah.
Maybe three or four of them are bad.
Yeah.
And then,
is that funny? You can't, like, you know which one's worse.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But and I know where I lost it, and I know where I'm telling you why. Like, stop. I know where it's removed from the fire of an original idea.
Yeah.
Like, those episodes that are bad because there wasn't me in my living room at its core going, like, and then this happens, and then I come in with Cosby tickets, and then those ideas aren't flowing. So it kind of, now it's an episode of TV. I don't want to do an episode of TV.
Yeah.
Like, the same.
You don't want it to be just a refillable.
Who cares? Yeah. I don't want it, like, stand up, like, my special. I don't want to do a special.
Yeah. What do you want to do?
I don't care about doing a special. Yeah. I care about, like, as pretentious as it'll sound, capturing an idea. I care about that. Like, because I know that's the only shit that works. Everything else fails. Everything else is meaningless. It's why we know people who are in high positions who hate their jobs, who, like, go to work every day, who have some show that they do nightly or have some show that they do daily, and they don't like it.
Right. But I don't think it fails.
No. I'm
for
by
you,
my criteria of success.
Sure.
You know how some people, I hate to throw them under the bus, but some people even make money look sad, like Nick Cannon. Like, you ever see Nick Cannon and you just don't want to be Nick Cannon? Nick Cannon can make consistently $100 million more than me a year.
Yeah.
And I just would never, do a radio show to your talk show to you, like, I would never want to do that. But that's for me, by my own personal criteria of success. But my criteria of success is very personal. It's tracking growth, trying to challenge myself in a way that, like, so if I'm doing an episode of TV and it's like, oh, he booked two dates or whatever the fuck, hokey sitcom shit, or even if it's something provocative that I don't fucking feel, it's worthless.
Sure.
Like, it's meaningless. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. So in terms of, you know, you've made public statements about Chappelle in terms of, you know, how he's locked on to this topic for reasons that are relatively unexplainable. I can't explain it. Unless it's like religion. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Or some sort of mental glitch.
Yeah.
But you're conscious of you're aware of what, you know, we're up against as people who believe in tolerance and progress, you know, people.
Yes.
That the underdog, whoever they may be, you know, deserves to have a life without being, you know, trampled upon.
Yeah.
So,
well, my like, you know, I don't even say my thoughts on Chappelle is coming, one, from a fan's perspective.
Sure, of course.
Of someone who just has clearly a brilliant mind.
Yeah.
And knowing that he's an artist.
Right.
Because I was talking about this with a friend about, like, you kind of do have to draw the line, right? And I don't even mean this pretentiously, but this is the place to even say it. But, like, some people are making artistic. Yeah, exactly. So I feel comfortable. but some people are making artistic choices and some people aren't, right? And
then
sometimes there's a frustration, like comics who like, and I'm saying this respectfully, that like are taking the route of I'm posting a clip every day and doing the thing, or
look
like
at me do crowd work badly.
Well, because obviously the material has to be diluted because you have to do this every day.
Sure.
Like, so you can't be an artist in that you don't have the, and it's not even, that may not even be your goal.
No,
that's
I get
not
it.
Even their
I
goal.
Get it. Right. Yeah. So, art's like, there's only a few of us.
Well, I'm saying Chappelle is an artist. Mm-hmm. He is an artist and very clearly an artist.
Yes.
And,
true.
And I'm saying from the same perspective of like, if, you know, I love Jay-Z's Blueprint 1.
Right.
Love Blueprint 2.
Right.
If Blueprint 3, if all Blueprints were him talking about trans people, I'd be like, hey, Jay, like,
what's up?
I'm a fan.
yeah.
You know, like, so that is just more because I know.
I get it.
He has such an expansive mind. So that came from a place of love. Like,
no,
I
totally
like,
understand that. But what the next step from love is sort of like, what's going on?
Yeah, but that only certain people will ask that question. Comedians get caught up in, like, you know, it's the illusion of it's a fight for freedom of expression. And,
yeah, no,
you know,
no,
like,
not, I don't, I think.
Like, you know, it's a battle. Like, Neil had a funny thing. He's just talking about, like, comedians talking about the battle that they have. Yeah. He's like, what battle? People are turning to Rogan for health advice.
Yeah, right. What meat do I eat?
the battle.
So,
like, everyone has, like, deals.
That is not what it's about. That's almost the new hack. Is that, like, I don't know if I can say this.
But it's an excuse to keep it exterior, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Like, it's all, like,
but it's also
monster.
Drawing lines. I mean, because it's like, there's no pushback. There's no anti woke, really. You know, you got the anti woke, you've got this consolidation of a point of view that's easily co-opted, you know, by right wing fuckheads.
Yeah.
You know, that really stifles, you know, cultural progress.
Yes.
And there's no strong voice on the other side. I mean, so when you speak out, or even when you do a show like Rathaniel, despite whatever feedback that's going to get, that is a unique voice standing up against this very myopic, small spectrum bullshit of what it means to have freedom of speech.
So the
fact that there is no real opposition, and that there is definitely a line being drawn in this community and in comedy is disconcerting.
I'm saying, look, there's plenty of opposition, right, in the
kinda,
world.
In the world.
And in your own mind.
Okay.
I just, you know, I, as an artist, like, I like it when the danger is real.
For me, right?
And so, and even the art like that that am attracted to is like when the danger is real.
Yeah.
And it's a lot like there's an air of presumed danger that I believe is false.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
self-importance in a way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know. I might get canceled. Like, no one's even here.
you would dream to.
Dream
to.
Because you want that kind of attention.
Yeah, who doesn't want that kind of attention? Yeah.
So let's go back to, like, what I was getting at, though, in terms of your decisions around, like, you know, what was the decision around doing Drew's special without an audience? The first one.
I saw him, and, like, kind of my first thought was that it almost felt like soliloquy.
I was
just curious, like, it felt like it was all in his own head, and he suffered from, like, hearing loss his whole life, and it was just like, and he's such a dynamic performer, and it was like he would do this if no one were in the room. That's really where the thought came from.
Yeah.
And I was curious, would it work if no one were in the room?
Yeah.
But being truthful, it's probably something like I wanted to do, right? But it just, as the kind of musical chairs lined up, it's like working with Drew had a, and it was just like this idea. So like it was probably, I'm very proud of it, but it's probably even more suited for me.
Right.
You know, like,
sure.
it came from even my feelings at the time. Now I have a need for the audience, and we'll get to that later, but that's my relationship with the audience has changed. But
how has that happened? Like, what was the transition?
I didn't do stand-up for a long time.
What were you doing?
So just, you know.
Was it during the pandemic, you mean?
Before. After eight, I did. I was very happy with eight.
Yeah.
And it felt like the max of where that could go.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, okay, like, I was happy with the material. I was happy with my work with Bo. I just didn't see. Like, I didn't see, like, I was like, okay, like, you know, me doing stand up in that way, I reached the ceiling.
But was that a stand up issue or was that a personal issue that you knew you had to deal with something in yourself that wasn't, you weren't ready to do stand up about?
Well, I'm saying at the time, like that was my feeling on just from a purely observing, because. And this is all, it's all personal, right? It's all personal. Like, my view on my career and my thing. Okay. So, like, how I felt, like, you know, at that point, Twitter is swallowing up the comedian. Yeah. You know, like, Twitter's like, when you go to McDonald's and you see the screen.
Sure, yeah.
Where the cashiers used to be. Yeah. Like, you know, like, Twitter's relationship to the comedian.
Yeah.
And
it's that limited a menu.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, all of it. Like, the internet's relationship to comedy as
okay.
we knew it.
Okay.
So, you know, I was laughing at shit on the internet like everybody else. So it was like, and I was like, I got nothing to add to this.
Yeah.
You know, I really was feeling that way kind of constantly. And yes, there were things I was running from in my life, my own sexuality, my family's history, all these things. Like, I'm running from that kind of existed separate. Right. So even.
But it influenced the other thing.
So once dealing with that, like, just like in my life, as a man of leisure, I heard Eddie Murphy say in a Rolling Stone interview once that he was just a man of leisure now.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like smoking weed and like playing reggae music. And I was like, okay, I did that for like 4 years. I was just like, just till the money ran out. Just like, all right, well then.
But you were working on shit.
I was always writing, always working.
But I mean the personal thing, like, because like, you know, I.
But oh, yes. So. Free associative therapy, all of that. Like,
and you did that?
Yeah, still.
Yeah.
But facing things and trying to have access to bravery in my real life and have brave moments where I can have conversations
that were difficult. But was this all prep?
What's that?
Was it all prep to sort of like face?
Well, in a, you, it everything we do is all
I guess,
prep
but you know, but yeah, I guess what I'm looking at.
But I'm an artist, so I make home videos or I make Sermon on the Mount, like sure. These are like peaks into like, and there's small things on HBO that like I'm happy I was able to make and have an outlet for it.
Uh-huh.
But just like, this is all for me, just exploring, like taking cameras home and like try like figuring
no
out
thought
a lot
of an audience.
No, it's just what I wanted to see. Like, home videos is so specifically me. It sounds like me. It is
sure.
Like, that's such a personal tucked away, like it's like an album cut that like an artist made. There's like a demo
comes out later.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And you're
exactly.
Like, oh man, that's when he was first doing that
shit. Yeah, that was just a thing that I had released on HBO, but was for me.
Right.
And me trying to come out to my mom. Like, these were very scary things for me, but it was like, I didn't send it to press when I released it. I didn't do press for it. Like, I just was like,
leave it there.
This is it. And it was also, it was for me. It was to show my family themselves, all these types of things. But all of this is me exploring my capacity as a filmmaker, who I am on camera, my ability to be truthful on camera, who I am as a performer, all these things, like exploring these things. But I just need to make stuff.
And what was the impact? You know, on the family, like before Rathaniel, with the documentaries, with the home videos and Sermon on the Mount, how did it change your relationship?
It's like having the realest conversation you could have, but like on HBO, right? Because it's like having a real conversation, and it draws lines in the sand. Like, people, like, you know, I'm gay, my mom believes in God, and to us we're on opposite sides of a big hill, right? And so, like, any public declaration of that, any the things that I'm making are just, you know, it has the same effect that the conversation would have. I just need to make something of it. I need to make
I get that. But ultimately, you know, needing to make art and having the platform that you have. I mean, there's a lot of people that need to make art that nobody sees, really, or seven people see, but they still need to do it and they do it.
Yeah.
So at some point you realize that you need to make art, but you also realize that, you know, thousands of people are going to see it. Whether you think about those people or not, you realize it. So there is a bigger declaration to it.
So home videos is probably, in the thousands of, like, you know, that it was made with less consideration than you'd say.
Oh, no, I know. I'm not saying you're playing to them, but like, what has been, because like somebody in what you're doing, in your personal bravery, in your struggle to figure out a way how to be brave in your personal life and then to sort of live in your truth, you know, that is an inspirational struggle. Like, there's something about wanting to express yourself and wanting to be an artist, but you have to be in your heart, I think, on some level, you know, wanting, you know, people to know that it's okay to live your truth.
Yeah. Well, now, recently, I've felt that sense of responsibility.
Okay.
I've run from that sense of responsibility, I think, my whole career, right? But now in being truthful and connecting, I'm like, oh, I see what this can mean to people, and I see how it can connect. And I wasn't doing material like that before. It was like I was trying to be funny or whatever, but I wasn't, like, doing that. And so now I am imbued with a sense of responsibility in my work. That I was leading to, like, with all these things, like, leading, it was leading to,
sure,
like,
of course,
like,
right.
Yeah.
But, like, it seemed, one, what were the discussions, you know, with, but because, like, you know, Rathaniel, you know, as, you know, people are going to interpret that, you know, whether you read the criticism or not, or whether you read the raves or whatever you read about it, you know, the primary idea is this is very personal. Mm-hmm. It's a great performance. It's powerful. And then the other side of that is, but is it stand up? Is he a stand up? Are we still doing stand up?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean,
but I think it's supposed to it's supposed to spark those questions. I don't,
I know that. But before we get to that, though, what were, you know, your discussions with Bo? You know, after you did, you know, the two documentaries, you know, and you're moving towards this material. And I guess I don't know how much you were working it out in the clubs leading up to it or how much of it was a public conversation.
I started in the clubs, but it proved to be the wrong environment. So then I started doing shows removed from the clubs.
Just in small theaters.
Yeah.
So what was the conversation with Bo, you know, in terms of what your intentions were? As a director to the artist,
I think me and Bo are, I think we're both obsessed with television, from YouTube to, you know, broadcast to whatever, just like the medium, right? Obsessed with events, experiences, these types of things. So like the conversation is always, it starts on what is the show. Right. Like we start in a very simple place.
In terms of look or intent, like what is the show? Why are people going to watch it?
What
are we watching?
Yeah. What are we watching?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
What are we watching? Right. And I, just speaking for myself, I think I've always done stand up for these specials. Right. Yeah. To capture.
That's supposed to be what we work towards.
But I'm making that. I'm always making that.
Yeah, sure.
Like I know that's the biggest piece of my. I don't really tour again. Like, and at this part of the reason, it probably begs a lot of questions. Like, well, what is this? Like, what is the, you know, what? But the world is changing.
As a guy who's the comic and touring extensively right now, or whatever my life is.
Yeah.
I mean, I can watch Rathaniel, and now after you, like I would have said, like, he hasn't really worked this shit out.
No. Well, but it's not working it out. I don't tour in that sense of like, because I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it to sharpen it for.
I get
like,
it.
You
want to have that looseness.
It's where I'm not a politician.
Sure.
This isn't a stump speech. It's still a show.
Yeah.
But my show isn't shaped by jokes. That's what
I'm
saying.
But it's still like, shaped by a through line.
It's shaped by a narrative.
Yes.
But it's not shaped by jokes.
I get
it's
it.
It's funny. But it's not shaped by jokes.
And if you don't shape it by jokes, then, you know, out of necessity, because of whatever your heart says in the moment, if you need to find the funny, you'll find it.
Yes, but I'm only responding to, so like, you're saying working it out. That's a different standard. I sometimes toy with the idea of like, oh, maybe like just call it something else. I go back and forth. Sometimes I'm like, all right, well then just call what I do something else, because I don't even really care to be in the conversation sometimes, like
about comedy.
All right, well, because sure. It's so personal. I'm like, yeah. Then I do something else, and fine. I sometimes am at a venue known for comedy doing it. And sometimes I'm at the Blue Note or whatever, but this is my show. And as far as shows go, put it in a different pile.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to work it out.
But then my mind goes back to like, no, like, because comedians are a frustrated bunch, but I love it. And I love the art form a lot. And my true intention is to expand the art form, and I don't want to see it die. I don't want to see it die. And I don't think people know that they're dead. I watch comedy and I feel like, oh, this is dead. Like, oh, we're like, these are ghosts. I like sure. watch specials. I'm sure. like, oh,
zombies.
It's worked out. And oh, by sure. the old,
I get it.
The old,
like
the definition.
Shit, the shit is already stale, you know, yeah. once it hits the TV.
But it's dead. Yeah. Like it's because there's no show. There's no core. There's no fire. There's no light. There's
no
passion. Well,
you got to leave that room, man.
So what I'm saying is I know what the art form, what I, in my mind, see it. Like its potential. I think it can be and has room for like growth outside of the traditional
stand-up expectations. I get it. But like, I mean, I understand what you're doing. And I I'm from the same school of thought.
Yeah.
That, you know, you improvise and you work your shit out.
But we're doing
publicly.
Something. No, we're doing different things, I think, though.
Maybe. I don't think I'm gay.
No, but I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think you're an incredible craftsman who's let people in to yourself. I'm doing something like I'm like telling the truth on stage. I say this humbly, but it is just a very. It's a high wire act.
Well, that's all.
But you're
not giving me the credit because, like, you know, I am living in a world, you know, where you know I'm not that great a craftsman, and all I do is tell the truth and hope that, like, I have to contextualize things now where I say I cannot speak broadly.
Yeah,
I cannot speak in generalizations.
Yeah.
So if you identify with my story, then that's for you.
No, but you have more of a I think it's like you have more of, and I'm not saying this as a not.
I think you
have more of a structured. Like a more traditional, like if I see you on a talk show, right? See you on like Fallon, or something, right?
Sure, I know how to do that.
You know how to do it, but I mean this because I love when like Martin Short is on it, and like and Burr and it's like this, like
Where you're going,
but you know where you're going,
right?
As a performer, I watch you and I go like, oh, Mark knew, oh, and he brought it back, and he's the callback of the thing.
Yeah, sure,
what I'm saying is. I'm my show.
Yeah.
I think I'm relying on a set, just something, a different set of skills.
On being present in your
show. Yeah, but still shaped around the show. It's very important that it's a show and that it's crafted as such, but it just strikes a different tone.
You don't want to know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I get it. So that's why I'm saying, like, and this is just me, it's in response to the term of like working it out. Like, well, what does that mean? You know what I mean? Like what does it mean to work a thing out? Like, because part of like my career, you know, I think I was trying to prove a lot. Like my first two specials.
Yeah.
We could go as deep as saying trying to prove it. I could make it as a straight man.
Yeah,
I could make it without like relying on any crutches. Like it was always removal of crutches. I like trusting my own internal brilliance. And I could do this. I can make it on these jokes. My jokes are better than your jokes and these things. Sure. And I made it as that. I did those things.
Yeah.
Right. Like I just, for me, it that doesn't maximize my potential,
right?
Is what I've learned.
Yeah,
that I'm funnier, I'm better if once I cross that line, like, and I think I've been begging to do that my whole life, but I just didn't have the knowledge.
You know, once you get to a place where you can let go of the expectation to repeat it,
yeah,
that's not your job. that you know, you find the real freedom.
Yeah, it's definitely you know, it's me finding urgency and presenting that as a show.
So when Bo when you guys, he did 8-2, I guess, right? But the new one at the Blue Note, the vibe was, you know, you're just coming in off the street and you're gonna lay it down.
But
so,
no, but not even is the vibe was like walking through the snow to say the thing I was terrified of. Like, you know what I mean? Like the vibe was,
were
that
you
like,
truly terrified?
Of course.
Yeah.
I came up after 30, bro. Like I thought I would have rather died than have someone find out. Like, these are true words. I'm not even saying it as a like that's what I'm saying. For me, the special was, it's not even about coming out, and my act, it's not even about that. I think it's easy to go like, well, it's the coming out special, yeah, sure. Whatever. Sure, whatever makes comedians feel better. I was facing a fear on stage for real. I was terrified every time I said it. I dealt with gasp in Atlanta, like people getting angry, people because it's going against my audience.
You said it a couple times.
Well, just again, it's a show. It's still a show, and I did the road, but it's more, it's presenting the show. It's not like, so I had reactions that were like,
so you had, once you did the special, you had experience with how it was being received.
I knew that it goes against my audience expectation, and that's also part of the thing that we wanted to capture, because it's so rare you get that. Like, I have an audience coming in, like you said earlier, Gerard, as you know him, and I'm presenting something else, and that's like, oh, we get to capture that on camera. That's an exciting thing.
So the show is about your fear?
But the show is about, the synopsis could be, man who's afraid of heights jumps out of an airplane on HBO. That could be the name of the show. That was what we were capturing. Yeah. So it's like that. That's what I'm saying. Again, humble. People don't really do that. Like, work out their actual fears on stage. Like, that's what I'm. My recent show is more about that. Like,
not many, but there's a couple.
It's happened like 3 times
in the history of comedy.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Like, but it's not like, because it's, most people shouldn't do that. I don't think most people should do that. But I'm saying it's just what I've chosen to do, and like, I've used the base of my career as like a trellis.
How many did you record? 2?
4.
4. Mm-hmm. How many were included in the special? Was that just, like I'm saying, did you pull from 4 or did you just use one show?
I don't know actually what the full number, like, like first.
I'm just curious because I watched it, and outside of, and you know, my experience with it was, you know, exactly what you're talking about. But ultimately, there was part of me that's sort of like, I wish there was a closer, you know, that just like, you know, the sort of pensive, unresolved situation, which remains unresolved, I imagine, with your mother, is what it is.
Yeah.
So there was no.
Yeah, that's the show.
That's it.
Well, that was the show. Again, I'm like, present, like, yeah.
but asking you as a comic, because there are jokes in there.
Yeah, of course.
Now, which one's your favorite one?
I don't have a favorite.
No,
one.
I mean, what did you like saying the most? Come on. Yeah, I mean, when you're up there, you know when you're about to drop one. It gets.
Because I had never told stories before.
Of personal types, right? Okay.
Period. I've never, like, a storyteller. So Roth Daniels, my first time, telling stories on stage, like, is my own. So I'm saying that to say that, like, all of them kind of feel the same in that way.
I thought the best moment, like, and I'm weird about this stuff, because like, even like when I watch, like, I haven't watched all of Chappelle's specials, but like, for me, the like, one of the best bits that he did in the last, you know, however many specials that I saw, was that one about Anthony Bourdain's killing himself.
It's a great intro. Yeah.
The one where he's like that, talking about his friend and the football guy. He would never think about.
He's still alive.
Genius bit, you know, in terms of, you know, entitlement, class. So it's all in there, and it wasn't his intention. But for me, the moment where, you know, where you don't necessarily want to be gay, right? And that the moment in the shower, I think, was the,
well, that's because you're a straight man. Like, that's such a straight man favorite.
Is it?
Oh, straight guys love the, because it's me reaching out to them. Like, I'm that's literally like an olive branch.
The moment where you're sort of like, oh my God.
That's a pocket of an olive branch to like a, that's me holding your hand through it. Like,
I'm not that.
But that's, I'm saying to like a, that's definitely like a classic, the straight man classic.
Right. Well, I mean, but I think that whether it's straight or not straight, I think that whether it's just, you know, cis culture in general, to bring in,
it's a window
that,
it's
to like, that moment,
it's a window of
wow,
but well, it's one of the only moments where it's like I'm giving you the experience
that's interesting. So that the in a sense it's more it's almost it's exactly indicative of the kind of comedy you used to do.
Moments of that. It's moments of like, oh, and now
literal observation.
It's an observation. Exactly. I'm outside of myself, giving you the experience of being me for a moment, and that's a tool.
So, how do you feel as an artist and as a person now? Do you feel relieved?
No.
All right. Good.
For what? Like, for what? Like,
well, I mean that there's a that something that had been a burden for as long as it was a burden is lifted. So maybe relieves not, you know, like that. At least you can own yourself completely.
Yeah, but I mean,
maybe that's not relieving.
Yeah. It's like, but I'm also, you know, the resolution of the special is the lack of relief. The
ongoing
lack of it's like.
That, which I think you can accept you, but that doesn't mean that everybody can accept you.
Yeah. What would a closer have done to that?
Well, there wasn't one, and I understand that.
Yeah.
You know, but like that's just me and my, you know, my old school comedy expectation.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with subverting that.
But then where does the old school stop or whatever, right? Because then it's just like, well, if you were alive during Shecky Green, then you're like, why aren't you doing like?
Well, no. Like, I mean, I'm not talking about that tradition. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like that there was no other way to really finish the story you were telling.
Yeah.
That, you know, I understand that.
Yeah. As far as the story goes. Like,
sure.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm interested in stories and I'm interested in specials and presenting these things.
And look, I got no problem with a complete idea. Right. Well, I think that I'm not saying a closer necessarily even in funny. What was at the end of that was like, I don't know how this is going to evolve.
Yeah.
And I think that's true about anything.
Yeah.
But I think that in
not necessarily that I like
but
know,
just in life. I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, in the show, in you thinking about the parameters
I was gonna say,
of the
like,
show.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times when you're doing a show, it's like, are you setting up a series of sequels? Guess what? I'm back. It's still not going good with my mom.
Yeah. No, it can, but what is your special? If you're talking about personal stuff in your special, it's all a series of sequels.
Sure.
It's all like like 8 ended on a joke outside of myself that was probably the most personal thing I said in it, just like about like family secrets and dad having other family.
Oh yeah,
like 8 in many ways ended on a cliffhanger that then we stepped into in Rothaniel. Like, it's all connected. It's all and it should be like it should track your growth artist, like,
right? Well,
like,
I think that
your work.
I think that like what we're sort of like talking about in terms of the difference in approach is that like even. You know, that there's a movement against generalization, you know, for the personally authentic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we talked about point of view and that the only way you can have a point of view is if you offer your personal truth at, you know, at the risk of losing people or at the risk of it being too personal, right? So that's the primary difference. It doesn't mean it's not comedy, but like, you know, you look at someone like Pryor, who is, you know, an artist, but was very concerned with being general enough to sort of get over.
Well, that's our review of that, of Pryor.
Yeah, but
if you read about Live on a Sunset Strip, it sounds a lot like one of my first things.
Sure,
like,
sure.
I'm like, oh.
Sure, but
like,
I'm saying but he was trying to, you know, broaden, you know, as
I mean, I think he, as a result, has.
Yeah.
But that's different. It's like saying, you know, 808s and Heartbreak was trying to change the sound of radio. Like, it's trying to be its own specific thing.
Okay,
Seinfeld,
I can get that.
Is trying to do Seinfeld. It's not your fault every fucking comic walking out of Montreal wants to do that.
I don't know.
Too.
Like, the reason I'm saying this is that, like, I know people, and I'm seeing it more lately, mm-hmm. that try to have the broadest appeal possible.
Yeah.
In order to maximize their exposure and their business,
yeah.
And they're doing it on purpose,
yeah.
And I don't know, I don't know that that makes them less of an artist.
I think it's just the pursuit of different things.
That's right.
I think it, like, I learned a thing about myself that like when I bring up numbers, it's because like I want to be seen. I don't feel like I'm getting the respect I deserve. So when I start thinking
right,
about
respect.
Numbers,
yeah.
I'm seeking respect from
right.
From
whoever.
From whoever I don't feel like I'm getting it from. Yeah. Like,
but that's an internal voice.
That's an internal voice. But I'm saying like
uh-huh.
I'm saying that like that could be how I uh-huh. quantify my career. You know, through
you've
like
struggled with that.
I you could, but it's just
you
like
have.
I know that it's not coming from the
right place.
The right place.
I get
like,
it.
Like,
but that's a struggle. You're aware of that within
it
you.
It can quickly go back if my ego is like, if my feelings are hurt by some comment. I've heard comics dismiss the thing, as if like people don't want it. And I'm just like, my ego goes, I mean, you'll never. Yeah. I can go to like where I'm living.
Sure,
I'm like,
sure.
You know, I've read things about me and I'm.
Yeah,
on a boat.
Who the fuck are you?
Yeah. Like, and I'm like, oh, why am I going to that? But and it's like, oh, that's ego. I'm like, my feelings
ego.
Are hurt.
Yeah, right.
Because I feel like I owed more respect
sure,
or whatever.
Sure.
The
yeah,
thing. So
I
go to numbers. Some people are just that's their pursuit, and that should be their pursuit. Like
yeah.
how well the thing that number one on the whatever, or even how many or how many years and those
yeah.
types of things. That's just not. Let me know how we
Excuse
got
me.
Here.
I know how we got here. It was just about the idea of speaking generally to a broader audience on purpose.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah. Because if you're in pursuit of that,
yeah.
like, then that's the job.
Right. And you're saying that we can't backload that into Pryor's intentions. It was
yeah,
just because
yeah.
he was
he
was more troubled and pure
listen,
than that.
I want as many people possible to see my work. When we make something,
yeah.
it's like, I want you to see it. It's
yeah.
a movie, the
sure.
special, whatever. Like,
right.
I want everybody to see it. But the intention was personal and specific. The hope is that by going there, it can connect with as many people as possible. But I don't think about that when making
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. So what's going on now outside of the movie? What's the big plan? I hear you, like, I heard about the Montreal show. I was up there talking about sex.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, that's been life.
Are you having fun?
Yeah, I mean, in ways, but I mean, obviously, I'm dealing with things and still trying to get rid of shame and.
Mm.
You know, all the things.
Yeah.
It's not that's not unique, but I'm trying to process it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, I'm just trying to process. But I'm enjoying myself. I still like.
You're doing stand-up?
I'll probably go to Burgers Never Say Die or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that?
Oh, you got to go. It's like my favorite burger.
Oh, really?
It used to be in Sean's backyard, and then he opened a restaurant, and it's.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's so good.
So, stand-up, you doing much?
I have a show. It's like. I'm actually doing one tonight.
Where?
At the Lyric. It was
yeah.
just like I think later tonight. Yeah, I have a show. I have a show. It's getting there. I like, you know, I'm
you're working
at
it
the
out.
Point. Yeah, I guess that's the word. Yeah. Yeah, I'm figuring it out.
Okay.
I'm definitely figuring
right,
it out. I'm
right.
trying to. I would probably word it. I'm trying to understand what the fuck is going
sure.
on.
Okay. Okay. All right. You use the language you want to use.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, working it out.
Right.
I'm going to go work it out tonight.
Okay. Good talking to you, man.
Good talking to you.
That was good. I like talking to that guy. As I said before, On the Count of Three is streaming now on Hulu. And you can watch all his other stuff everywhere you watch other stuff. And please, can you hang out for 1 second? Just hang out. Stay right where you are, please. Thank you. As I mentioned earlier, if you want to send me a question for the Ask Mark Anything episode we're posting next week on the Full Marin, go to the link in the episode description. That's the part of this episode on your podcast player where it says all the stuff about today's show. You can also get a link to sign up for WTF Plus there. So I did it last month, but I just got the questions in real time from Instagram users. It was very rapid fire, and there were a lot of them. This time, I'll see all your submissions in advance, so I'll have a little more time to consider my answers and figure out some stories to tell. Okay? Next week, we have Andrew Garfield on Monday's show and singer-songwriter S.G. Goodman on Thursday. Both great talks. I didn't know what to expect from Garfield, but we had a pretty deep, it got pretty emotional around, once again, around grief and around, it really kind of unfolded nicely. I really didn't know what to expect, and it was great. And S.G. Goodman has two records out, and they're tremendous. And I didn't know what to expect. She's from Kentucky. She lives out in the rural part of Kentucky. She has very interesting life, and she's kind of an amazing songwriter and singer, and I love her work. But I was nervous, but it was great. It was great. I'm in Lincoln, Nebraska at the Rococo Theater tonight, then Des Moines, Iowa at the Hoyt Sherman Place tomorrow, August 19th, and Iowa City, Iowa at the Englert Theater on Saturday, August 20th. I'm in Tucson, Arizona at the Rialto Theater on September 16th, Phoenix, Arizona at Stand Up Live on September 17th, Boulder, Colorado at the Boulder Theater on September 22nd, Fort Collins, Colorado at the Lincoln Center on September 23rd, and Toronto, Ontario at the Queen Elizabeth Theater on September 30th. And October 1st. London, England, and Dublin, Ireland, I'll be coming to you in October. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I have new dates for November and December in Oklahoma City, Dallas, San Antonio, Houston, Eugene, Oregon, Bend, Oregon, Asheville, North Carolina, and Nashville, Tennessee. Go to WTFpod.com/tour for all dates and ticket info. Here's some guitar, same as the old guitar. Monkey and La Fonda, Cat Angels Everywhere.